Good evening, everybody. You are listening to Davin's Den. Yes, Davin's Den, the show that is better than drinking with Bill Cosby.
Yes.
Well, I guess. The number to call in is 845-986-8804, 845-986-8804. You can join our chat room, the Den Pen, by going to davinsden.com and click chat and listen live. Who writes this copy? Or if you're listening, what?
Who reads this copy?
Nobody with ability, I assure you.
You might want a word with yourself at the end of the show.
What?
Might want to have a word with yourself at the end of the show.
All right. The other seven voices in my head will have to take a number.
Yeah.
If you're listening to one of our affiliates, simply open up a new window in your browser and click on and type in davincomedy.com. Go to the Davin's Den page on the bottom, click on that, and then click chat and go. I am your host, Davin Rosenblatt, joined by that boisterous laugh, Joe Curry.
Hello, good evening.
And Pip Helix.
Hi, everybody.
Haven't had a... Usually it's the tech that screws me up. Now it's the English.
I know. That darn language.
Maybe you're shocked that the tech is working. You don't know what to do with yourself.
pretty much.
Because you're usually preoccupied with getting everything rolling, and now you're like, oh, what do I do now?
Yeah, I was like, got to get the mouth working.
As you're talking, I'm like looking, are we still on the air?
Yeah.
I know.
He says the tech works, but how does he know?
Yeah.
Fun show tonight. On tonight's show, we'll be discussing the controversial comment Bill Cosby made during a recent performance. The Pope is weighing in on humor when it comes to religion. And part three of our interview with scam victim and now scam advocate Tracy Douglas. And we'll see how scammer Mickey Wynn is making out with the scam baiter Sickly Sue. Got a little bit of show news, some good news we got last week.
We can sure use it.
Things are fine.
No, you can always use good news.
Sure.
Yes.
We're pleased to announce that the live show is now on TuneIn Radio. TuneIn Radio. Our replays have been on there for a while, but now you can download the free app, the free TuneIn app for your Apple or Android device, and listen to us live by searching Davin's Den.
That is so cool.
Yeah
absolutely.
One of the things that's difficult about having an internet radio show is that it's sort of appointment radio. You have to sit at a device. Now you can bring the device with you and listen to us every place you go.
Yes.
So awesome.
Well, I mean, they could have before.
Yeah.
Well, they could have before because basically you go into Davin's Den, you know, davinsden.com, go to the Listen Live link. Now, what I do is if I'm running late to get to the show – and I want to hear the show. What I do is I get my.
I like it. And I want to hear. Because I don't always want to hear.
I don't want to hear your knuckleheads talking to me.
Sometimes I want to listen to something good and relaxing.
I need to know what to defend myself against.
It's a sound strategy. I can't argue with that.
Said behind my back.
No. I figure you're listening. So yeah.
So basically, you go in, Davin's Den. And it's very easy when you go in. You just click Listen Live. Brings it right up.
Yeah.
You plug it right into the jack in the car.
So cool.
And it comes right through the speakers. So it's like listening to, you know, normal radio. Everything is all systems go.
Normal radio, except with us.
Wait a minute.
So that takes away the normal.
So
we're excited to finally be on TuneIn. It's a free app, kids. Check it out. And you can get a lot of stations. Most of the big stations are on TuneIn and everything. And now we're with them.
It's a coup.
It's a coup?
It's a feather in our cap.
Oh.
Oh.
I thought you meant like it was a takeover.
Like a takeover? No, I didn't mean that kind.
Okay.
Sometimes there are more than one recent.
English is a bitch tonight, kid.
You know what?
For the record. Yeah, well, that's the thing. For the record.
Yeah.
Whoever thought Joe would be the one that could speak properly?
For the record, Joe, you weren't here while I was trying to record something earlier, and I was stumble bunnying my way down the garden path.
Let me tell you something. When I'm doing the iHeart clips, and it's like a simple read, and it's like if it's a difficult read, like if it's, you know, this, and I got to remember, I'll blow right through it. If it's like, all right, great, I just blow this read, I'll get it right off the bat.
Right.
And like by the fifth take, I'm like, you've got to be kidding me. Who writes this copy?
And it's yours. Yeah.
So really the problem is the person who's writing, whoever happens to be writing.
It is actually the regardless if it's you or if it's prepared, it's the person that writes copy. If you have to read copy, the way you phrase it, when you have to read it, is so very important. It really is.
Also, you know what? A cold read is a bitch and a half because you don't figure out where you have to breathe. You don't figure out what is going to be the word that's going to make you go. I was saying thwart.
Yeah, I was going to say, you did a great job with that.
Thank you.
Because I wrote that. I'm like, damn, that was a stupid word to write.
It's like, thanks.
I'm glad I don't have to read this crap.
Yeah. Thanks for throwing in some of those thwart kind of words. I was like, sucker and fuck.
No, you did a good job with it. We'll have Joe give a listen later on. But I was pleased with your work for our latest project.
Thank you. Yes, our project.
And I'll be giving Joe some more assignments to edit stuff, so he'll be thrilled.
Your turn. Na, 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 na.
Hey, listen, we're all working overtime on this.
Everybody gets into the paddy whack machine.
Everybody gets into the paddy whack machine.
The paddy whack machine.
I know. Have you heard that? Have you heard that in a million years?
You never, like, when you were a kid and you were playing spud?
I know there's a knick-knack that goes.
No, it's like everybody's like, when you're a kid, everybody spreads their legs.
Mm-hmm.
I know, you like it so far.
How did I miss out on this?
And the one going through the machine, wait, it gets better. Has to go run through all the spread legs, or everybody smacks him on the butt.
Oh, yeah. When I used to get lost at the department store, they used to threaten me with the spanking machine.
The spanking machine.
But was that done by other kids?
No, it was done by the staff of the store.
The store was going to hit you?
Yeah, you know what they told me? Yeah, one time, because I was a little bastard.
I don't care. They don't know you that well.
But back then, yeah, they told me.
Who the hell is the minimum wage sales clerk to spank you?
Oh, yeah, they told me once, because I used to get lost all the time, and he told me they were going to put me in a spanking machine. I'm like, what the hell is that? And they're like, you know, we all get together and we spank you.
How often were you at the store that you were getting lost?
Oh, enough.
Wait a minute.
Were you trying to hide or you were just getting lost?
I just couldn't stand the store. My mom had me on a leash.
I was on a leash, too.
Yeah,
wait, literally?
Yes.
Nettie put me on a leash.
Can I get that implemented again?
Yeah. I was
no,
on a leash.
You want a muzzle, stupid.
I was on a leash, and then I would go on all fours and bark.
No, you
no.
wouldn't.
Of course I did. I'm a dog now.
And he was 15.
How long have you known me? Right, but how long you know me? Like, as a complete asshole, you think I'm different?
Yeah, but
I'm different at four?
No, he did this last week.
I didn't know. See, I know I evolved into this. I didn't know you could. See, it just goes, you can't say genetics or, you can't say nature versus nurture.
No.
I was definitely nurture. Joe was nature. He came out this way.
4 years old, I'm putting a leash on you. You'll get lost. All right, I'm a dog now. Woof, woof, woof.
I hated the leash. You looked at it as an inspiration for a new bit.
Yeah, that's what I did. Even young,
he was writing material at four.
And much
better than what he writes now, by the way.
And my mom told me one time, she goes, how could you do that? And my mom goes, you want to hold the leash for 5 minutes?
It was the most horrible thing because I used to hide. Like, you know how they used to have the big circular racks of clothing?
Yes. Yes.
I would go in the middle of them.
I went in the middle of those. Yeah. I didn't have a leash, but I would hide in the middle
of
that.
Well, the leash takes care of the mystery.
Yes, it does.
I remember when I was 4 years old, I would run away and go into the curtain department and shit my pants.
Wait, what? What is wrong with you?
I was four.
But you were coming up with comedy and shitting your pants at the same time.
Well, you know, I was four. You shit your pants at four. The curtain department looked comfy because it was curtains at five.
That's why they. Well,
oh my god! No wonder you have a leash.
I'm surprised after that they wanted to put you in the spanking machine.
Yeah, really.
The rear would be the last thing I want to do.
Hey, when I was in with a shit filled, you know, pant full of shit, I'm gonna put you through the spanking machine. Go ahead, sis. There's gonna be a surprise waiting for you. It's gonna be like you're gonna be spanking a box of chocolate pudding.
It is amazing you. It is amazing you have lived to be the age you are.
Somebody didn't do away with him at some point.
I mean, there's
say,
so many people through the years that should have, quite frankly, for the stunts he was pulling.
I remember when I'd be in the toy department and the toy guy would come in like the sales guy. Sonny, put that down. I go tell him to go home and pull his pants down.
Did you really?
Yeah.
Who says that?
Go home and pull your
Who
pants
says that?
Down.
Well, of course, you. I don't remember why they go off to strange salespeople at the time.
No.
You know, did you say that? If you would have said that in church, you would have gotten a surprise.
Oh, yeah.
See, here's the thing, though, is that here's the store where this would be make headlines. Store
Kid
clerks.
Kid craps his pants? No, not
no,
so much.
Store
I still
clerks.
Can't walk past the curtain department.
Why do you have the need to take a dump? Where's the newspaper?
That's what I find a bathroom.
Who knew curtains were a laxative? Glad we have blinds.
Oh my god, I can never go to blinds to go. I shit myself.
So any window covering, and you feel the need to pass solids.
Window treatments, do it for him.
You should be put in a cell with no windows. We have a pod in my driveway now for all the stuff from the damaged in the flood downstairs. You should do the show from in there.
It looks pretty roomy in there. I thought that walking.
Well, it's got no windows, so you shouldn't have to crap yourself through it.
It also has no heat.
Not right. So I don't see an argument not to put him in there.
That is hilarious.
You're a filthy animal. I can't imagine why somebody See, like, if you're my kid and you're crapping your pants, I don't want you on a leash. I'm sending you out into the world. See, I'm hoping somebody takes you away and wipes your ass.
Yeah.
I don't want to have to deal with that.
I know. It's like, how come my leash is always frayed by the time I'm done with the store?
I remember the leash. It was yellow.
Really?
Yeah. We never put my daughter on a leash, but we did have her, like, when we go to Disney or something, that backpack, and it had, like, a monkey tail.
Oh.
And the kid still didn't like it, but it's not as dehumanizing as
the leash.
Yeah. The leash is completely dehumanizing.
I mean, at least my leash was black. I didn't have a yellow leash.
Yeah, that made it cool, Joe.
No. But for some reason.
It was really metal.
But it just seems like a yellow leash. You know, kind of like your military.
Joe, I think once you have made the commitment to leash your kid, you're really not worrying about their self-esteem and what people think of your kid.
I understand. You can work with you a little bit. You know, all right, I'm going to put you on the leash, but I'm not going to – we'll make it a black leash, not a yellow leash.
I didn't have the ability to negotiate.
I understand that. Neither did I, but, you know.
Guys, they could have been pink or lavender.
True.
I would have loved to have seen Joe on a pink leash.
This could be done, but it costs.
It does cost more now.
Yeah.
Well, if his friend is listening. Valentine's Day's coming up.
Right now.
Come on, sis, be a team player. You know what he likes. I know he'll crap himself, but get some wet naps. It's a good time.
And for the love of God, pictures.
Joe, do you have sensitive skin? We don't want you to chafe while she's doing this.
No, it's not sensitive.
Okay.
No, okay, good. And you know, that fuzzy handcuffs thing. That's good, too.
Oh, yeah.
So he doesn't chafe.
No, I got you.
I'm just throwing ideas.
Ah, clear. Good. All right.
That's the only way you can use the fuzzy handcuffs. You know, you can't.
We don't have fuzzy handcuffs. We got the real. Actually, my wife. I don't know.
Well, I guess that was a little TMI.
No, we got regular hands. We got a bitchin' bullwhip that we bought at a garage. Like a real bullwhip.
Yeah, no, that's the thing scary.
Yeah, like it's a long one.
I'm
too.
Sorry, but if you.
Motivational tool.
Well, now, let me find that.
Sniff the glove.
I'm going to crack the whip. No, seriously, yeah. Joe, if you don't start
that's
doing what I said.
With that damn thing.
Yeah.
Well, these things will get done.
But don't worry, Joe, it's black, so it's okay.
I'd be humiliated if it was a yellow one.
Of course, the only black thing Joe likes. Anyway, I move on. He's shaking his head. He's not saying no. By the way, I don't know. Did you see how they edit how the Joe Cumia show edited the clip?
No.
For the promo, I knew they were going to do this. I didn't say anything. But they included our segment for a promo for their
right.
show. And I'm sure you remember the point when I was getting into the statistics and I say, well, black-on-black crime is such and such percent.
Right.
percent. They do commit more crimes against other people. And, of course, that's where it fades out. not the point I was making after that. I knew that was going to happen. Assholes.
With your little red cherubby face.
It was a setup.
Oh, it was a setup. But you know what? You know how we always tease each other, and if you say something embarrassing, we say isolate that to use later? They did.
They got somebody who does stuff.
He doesn't
do show prep, but he can go back and isolate.
Yes.
He's a real credit to his craft. Oh. I don't know what that craft is, but.
But he must be a credit to it, I'm sure.
So I was thinking about this. On Saturday night, I was doing a gig. It actually turned out to be a variety show, because the closing act was a reggae singer
oh.
who had written for the Marley Brothers or Son Kids or whatever, and,
wow.
and recorded some big stuff. So that was the closing act. I was the middle act,
right?
And the opening act was a Jamaican country singer. Yeah, Joe, that's the right response. Joe's eyes kind of cross like they do. Pip looks confused.
I am.
I'd never seen a Jamaican country singer.
Now, like a Jamaican Midwest country singer?
Yes.
Or Jamaican in the country of Jamaica singer?
I don't understand.
Well, if you're in like Jamaica and you're in the outskirts of town and you're in what they would call the country part of Jamaica.
No, he was singing country songs with the cowboy. He had the full cowboy outfit on.
You mean like American country songs?
Yeah.
American.
But he was a Jamaican guy.
Yes.
With a Jamaican accent?
And dreadlocks.
And singing
oh,
in
hilarious.
No, singing country.
Really?
Yeah. It was quite interesting. It was good. but it's interesting. I'm like watching this. I'm
you
like,
won't expect that.
No.
No.
Like, of all the nights for me not to wear my cowboy hat.
Yeah. It's like the guy comes, hello, man, how's everybody doing? I got friends in low.
Wow. Yeah. Yeah. That's why I was confused. I had the same question as you. I was thinking, is it some sort of folk songs of his country?
You know,
or what?
Well, I opened with I said to the audience, I said, wow, Jamaican country singer, give him a round of applause. I've seen it all now. I said, you know, white people were very upset when there was a Jamaican bobsled team. So don't worry, white people, we still have country music. It's okay.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, after this, we're in trouble because if they learn how to river dance, we better move.
We have nothing on our
own. We have nothing left. But he was very good. But it was just completely wild. But I've noticed the way I handle these wild things now, and a bad gig like a hell gig, I've noticed my outlook on them has changed since we do the radio show. Because in the past, a hell gig was a hell gig, and you told it, you know, with other comics around the diner.
Now it's a way to kill 20 minutes on the air.
But it is. it is. And now when I'm presented with these situations, I go, well, you know what? This will make good radio.
I've done that.
Yeah.
And it makes me feel better about it.
I think that too.
Let me tell you something. When I was in that soccer place with dog shit on my feet, scraping it on
the Santa gig, the Santa story.
The Santa gig, yes. Scraping my feet and dog shit and cleaning. I'm sitting there going, this is going to be great.
but don't you find this has a way
with that.
Of making things more positive?
Absolutely.
Because you can't help but laugh because you'll sit there at this gig and go through what you're going through and just think of how funny it's going to be on the radio. You sit there and go, this is gold.
Oh, yeah.
It stinks on ice and you're going through like a shit
but
moment.
But it gives you something to look forward to when it's all over.
Right.
It's almost like, well, how bad is this going to get?
Yeah.
And then on the ride home, you start to formulate how you're going to tell it on the
right.
air.
Yes. Exactly.
Yes, you do.
Whole format down how you're going to do it. Yes, absolutely.
I actually think that the radio show has been beneficial for my outlook. Because I don't get miserable with this stuff now. I could go, well, here's the bright side. It's almost disappointing when a gig isn't a hell gig.
Yeah. No, slow down.
No, I mean, hell gigs are still hard. But like a couple weeks ago when I talked about that New Year's Eve gig.
Right.
You know, that stunk on ice, as Joe would say.
Yeah.
But I go, well, you know what? Well, like she's like, isn't this the worst thing ever? I'm like, well, you know, I got a radio show. It'll be fine.
Yeah.
And I'll even tell them. I go, don't worry, folks. I'm talking about all you people on Tuesday night. You have no idea.
Everybody's going to be on.
Oh, yeah. Thanks for writing my show for me.
So I really feel it has changed my outlook, which brings me to the next point, because I think it makes me more optimistic and able to deal with stuff. Joel posted something on Facebook. He posted a comic of it, and the part I want to get to is not necessarily the content of the comic, but just an outlook where it said, like, the greatest generation, and it had a man in a soldier uniform, a comic. You know, and a cartoon, and it had the lamest generation, you know, imploding, implying he was a slacker and everything. And that comic, you know, like a lot of things we see, the way a lot of people wax is nostalgic for the past.
Yeah.
And I noticed a lot of people do that. I don't tend to do that, but I mean, we have all heard stories growing up, you know, like your grandpa tell you know, when I was a kid, I had to walk 3 miles uphill to the school both ways in the snow. Like it was rougher, but they wax nostalgic.
Right.
And Joe, I know, waxes nostalgic a lot of time. Like, a lot of his references, I guess, are from a time, you know, that he remembers fondly.
A lot of my references are actually from my mother, that, and, you know, my mother and father, even though my father was, you know, pretty much gone when I was a kid, you know, my father had a very big influence on my mother. So a lot of the references that I use are actually from my mother, which are back from that day.
I was talking about more like your TV and movie references.
Oh,
not your stories, not your points or whatever, but like things that you harken back to.
My biggest problem is this: is that I don't really have the time to sit and watch like movies. And as a comic and as an entertainer, I really should keep on top of, you know, of pop culture.
Well, unless you want to play the Catskills,
I understand that. And the thing about it is, I haven't been to a movie in 5 years. I don't, if I haven't rented, if I had to go out and find a movie, I don't know how to Netflix, I can't get a DVD, I don't know.
Yeah, me neither.
It's just to the fact that, you know, either on the weekend I'm working, if it's the occasion that I am home on the weekend, I'll work around the house and I just watch whatever's on TV and I go to sleep.
Yeah.
So a lot of my references are what I have. From old
years
pop
ago.
Culture.
Well, here's my point. Because a lot of people do, and I was telling you before the air, I don't do this, but I notice a lot of people do. So maybe I'm unusual. I think it's kind of more depressing and more depressing outlook if you're always looking back, no matter what the situation is, how good things used to be, whether they, and it's a skewed prism because when you're looking back, most people don't remember how crappy things actually were in that
time.
They wax nostalgic. you know, whether it be cars or TV or the kids of yesterday versus the kids of today.
Yeah.
And to me, I always look forward, well, you know what? We got cool things now. You know.
But you do tend to go back into the certain effect on how simple things were. All right. Now,
they certainly were more simple.
Well, let's look at it in several ways, okay? 25 years ago?
Yeah.
There was no internet. There was no cell phones. There was no nothing. If you're at work, the phone would ring and you would send a fax. And at home, you are bombarded with information and calls and so on and so forth.
Yeah.
You know, and sometimes it's overload. So you look forward to go back to the day where you weren't getting bombarded with information and you know, coming at you at three different ways all at once.
See, yeah. I agree with that. But then you were like talking about like the kids today, and a lot of people do. You just happen to be, and a lot of your friends do too. And yeah. I guess a lot of people do. I just happen not to. But then I thought, oh, what's wrong with these kids today? Then I think about how good these kids are to feed into what Joe was saying, multitasking, doing a bunch of things that we were never expected to do, how they can master the technology, how they can learn how to play an instrument at a younger age and learn languages at a younger age. So to me, like, well, because I'm
seeing
it. Yeah, they do. And yes, it's more structured and we're overloading them more. Yeah. But to me, I'm optimistic. I'm like, these kids are amazing. Like, I don't look at it in a depressing way.
Well, let's look at what you just said. And my friend of mine, we were discussing that, about the kids and stuff like that, how bombarded they are with work. Now
it can be too much. I agree.
Now,
yeah.
Let's talk about with Common Core. You're not a big fan of Common Core, right?
No, I don't know. I don't know what you're talking about, bombarded, but no, I'm not a fan of Common Core.
You know, just about that.
Did you see the new shirt I have coming out?
No.
Oh, it has to do with Common Core.
But you know, and my friend is not that thrilled with Common Core and stuff like that because it feels that it's like
damn liberals, even though it's not.
But for the simple fact that she was saying it was taking the fun away. You know, the essential learning or the interest in learning away from the kids.
You know what it is for us? We can't comprehend it. And if my daughter could grasp it right away,
yeah,
then I would go, okay, well, then this is fine.
Mm-hmm.
And this is my problem. But the problem is if the kids can't grasp it, I can't help them with the homework.
Yeah.
That's where the disconnect is. So that is a case that you point out where I do look back for the nostalgia of when it was just get to the right answer.
Yeah.
Like I always say, everything's on a case-by-case basis, you know, with stuff like that. Now, let's go back to what I said. And I said, well, it was a nice, simpler time when you would go out and, you know, you weren't getting bombarded by the internet and you weren't having your cell phone ring and all this other stuff, you know, and it was just simpler. Times were simpler. But, you know, and you got to, you know, you look ahead. However, with the internet now is an indispensable tool.
Mm-hmm.
Your computer now is an appliance.
Oh, yeah.
Your cell phone, you can't. How many times have you gone out and come back in 10 minutes because you left your cell phone home
and panicked
and you freaked out? You can't leave home without your cell phone.
Yep.
Well, let me tell you something, kids. Before 1993, you left home without a cell phone.
Yes.
Every fucking day.
You yeah. did. And that
yes. Yes.
You did. Yeah. But again, you're right. And there's are certainly moments where I feel overwhelmed. And you know, Joe was talking about the different generations and the workers and everything. He's like, you know, these kids are lazy, blah, blah, blah. Whatever that is, you got to remember, there's not as many jobs out there because we have all this technology now that has eliminated a lot mm-hmm. of jobs and everything. Like going to the factory worker, like the generations of the 40s and 50s or the 30s and 40s when we were talking about, you know, they geared up for World War II.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they turned the factories over to stop making cars, for instance, and make bombers and tanks and stuff like that.
Right.
The fact of the matter is those jobs don't really exist anymore.
And here's the thing, too, now, and it's just the human thing. Now, as you're developing the technology, too, and that is one of the things that's going on with the economy, where they're saying the economy is rebounding. However, the pay grade is not.
No.
Now, what they're saying, one of it is that to a lot of mechanization and robotics and factories, where they're not bringing a lot of factory workers back. Now, as when people are developing robotics and how to increase productivity with robots and factories
mm-hmm.
and automation, are they really thinking on how it's going to affect the employees?
Well, no. Well, it's very simple. It's very simple. And then we'll get the more bigger thing about that. They have somebody to report to. It's called the shareholders, and they make, you know, their profit margin goes up. if they have less people to pay. And the American worker has never been more productive because the American worker works longer and harder and is now often doing the job. And Pip has talked about this. I don't know if she talked about it on the air, but certainly off the air, how she's often is doing the job now that were two positions.
Exactly. Yeah. What's happened with that is during the early 90s, when we had the bust, when the first bust happened during 88, I believe, going into 88, 89, we had
I think it was a little bit later. It was under Herbert Walker Bush. It was like right after Desert Storm because he was real. So it's early 90s because he was very popular and everybody's like, well, he's going to win re-election again after Desert Storm because it went so well.
Yeah,
and then the economy,
yeah,
like 92.
After the crash, when he had the crash, I think was in 80. When was the crash? 80.
What, like Black?
Black Monday?
I don't remember. I was too young for that.
So let's agree that it's going to be in that range. Now, a lot of people obviously lost their jobs. Now, when everything rebounded, they discovered how people were able to, because a lot of people got laid off. They discovered people.
1987.
Okay, great. Good. And a lot of people.
Well, that was the big stock market crash.
Yeah.
I was talking about the big recession under Herbert Walker Bush, mm-hmm. which was in the early 90s.
So around that. Now, and what happened was as the economy rebounded, a lot of employers discovered, hey, you know, these people that, you know, because we were shorthanded and we worked what we had, these people were doing, you know, 2 to 3 jobs. So when everything rebounded, they didn't hire. They just kept everything.
And that's what's going on now.
And a solid staffing. And that's what's going on right now.
Right. And which would, you know, when we were talking back on Facebook, you know, these kids, they don't want to work. And actually, our unemployment rate's like at 5.6 or 5.8%, which is really good. That
is actually good because basically the normal unemployment rate in good times is 4%, and that's reflected in people switching jobs, people retiring, and stuff like that. So when you have something at about what did you say five?
It's either 5.6 or 5.8.
So 5.8. Basically, it's going to be a 1.8 differential, which isn't that bad.
Yeah.
Right. So that's why, you know, when you like. Because you were on your thread, you were waxing nostalgia, I guess, about my generation, because I grew up in the 80s.
Yeah.
Joe was talking about, you know, people growing up in the 80s and 90s compared to people, I guess, from the 50s and 60s, which isn't even really Joe's generation, to be honest. Joe's more of a kid of the 70s.
Yeah.
I'm like, well, you know, I really don't know people that don't want to work. So it goes back to the waxing nostalgic. Like,
well,
you remember,
there was a lot of people. A lot of people that were there during the 80s when kids were raised in the 80s, and I know this for a fact. A lot of us, like, when kids would go to work at McDonald's or go work, like, you know, as a landscaper's helper and stuff like that.
Right.
A lot of the parents said, you know what, I don't want my kids doing that. I don't want them.
See, I don't.
That. And they don't know a good work ethic. They don't know what it's like to get their hands dirty.
I think
and really bust your ass.
But I think if those parents did that, and again, I've had a job since I was 13. So,
yeah.
But I think if those parents did that, they were making a choice for the kid that they want them to focus on the studies or extracurricular activities, whether it be sports or band or club, to get into college.
But you also need to know what it is to go out to work and really hustle for a dollar.
Yeah, but I don't think that makes them lazy. I got the impression from what you were saying that you thought like all these kids were sitting home and eating Cheetos all day.
No, they're not sitting home and eating Cheetos, but they don't have the work ethic where they're expected to really go out into a job like that and figure it out. And really figure it out and try to make your
way. Well, you got to remember now, a lot of these jobs that are out there, which is why, you know, has been so much unemployment, is really specialized. It's not like, you know, you go to the factory, somebody teaches you how to make widgets, you make a widget. I mean, you really need a lot of education because they want computer people. They want medical health people and everything. These are very specialized jobs.
But he's talking about, like, the kind of jobs that you would do after school or during summer break or something, those jobs.
But the kids today, they're doing other things.
But my whole thing is just to know what it's like to bust your ass. When I was, I'll tell you a story. When I graduated high school, I didn't go to college right away. I dicked around. I wanted to try comedy. I was a lumberjack, and I worked at the fence company.
You just don't hear that from most people. I was
No, he just throws that in casually, like everybody's done that.
I was a porn star.
Oh, I didn't get to that yet. All right, so anyway.
To really bust a nut.
It's all about wood.
But I would be working in freezing weather. I'd be working by the burn barrel building pallets with Anthony. I'd be digging holes in 90-degree weather.
Yep.
And there was one day in 1985, it was a cold, nasty, rainy day. And I'm working outside clearing a fence, and I stop and I said, I can't do this.
Yeah.
When I'm 40.
No.
It has to stop now. Now, with nobody helping me, with nobody, you know, pushing me, whatever, I stopped. I went into school. I busted my ass. I would be up at 3 o'clock in the morning studying because mm-hmm. I knew, you know, and when I started to progress in my life, I understood what it was like to work hard and really have to bust your ass.
But I think those type of things are present in every generation. There's people like yourself who are motivated by external forces that made you realize, hey, I don't want to do this anymore.
But I don't think the generation today really knows what it's like to bust your ass.
I don't agree with that. You got to remember, I see these. I don't know which generation today you're talking about. By the way,
I'm talking about the generation that the kids that were raised in the 80s.
So that's my generation.
The 90s, yeah.
My generation. It's been, we're going to make less money. There's been less opportunities and everything. You also got to remember the baby boomers, the greatest generation, if you will.
Yes.
Actually, no, they're not the greatest. Are they the greatest? No, they're before
they
the greatest.
They're after.
The generation after
the baby boomers have worked a lot later into their life.
Yes.
And they've amassed most of the fortune. So there's not the opportunity. It's just a fact. There's not the opportunities for my generation.
Right. Well, people are staying in the workforce longer,
yeah,
and then even
you don't move on. Like Joe, like for comedy, we've talked about this before many a time. We'll be driving and everything. You know, there was a time where people who had the amount of years in the business that you and I do, with our abilities, whatever they may be, would move on to a certain level. But here we've encountered a ceiling because the class above us hasn't moved out of that level. Like they used to get TV, like the comics of the 80s,
right.
They would get TV, and they'd be playing theaters, so we'd get to headline all the nice comedy clubs and everything.
Right.
But what's going on is now, because they're not making all these sitcoms anymore,
mm-hmm.
they're not, some of them are doing theaters, but a lot of them have had to go back to the comedy clubs. People like you or me who would have years of experience of headlining those clubs, because we would have naturally progressed up to that, have had to settle, say, longer than we would for MC and feature, because the group above us hasn't moved on. You know,
right.
That's kind of happened all across the board for Generation X. If you're talking about my generation, that's kind of happened in every field.
But my whole thing is that you don't accept it. You figure a way to get around it.
I don't think people give up.
That.
Some people give up. Some people, listen, there are certainly people that are willing to let mommy and daddy handle it, because quite frankly, mommy and daddy have more money
yeah.
than my generation, which has never really been before. But I also think there's a lot of people that are trying to fight through it. There's just not the opportunities. Anyway, my point is, I think if you look at the positives, look what we have now, and look what is going to be good. If you try to, you know, not focus on the negative things. For instance, Joe said the bombardment
right.
of technology, which, you know, we can't unplug. We can't decompress. It's terrible.
Not like that pizza commercial where they're going, we're going off the grid. You can't.
I can't. I'm guilty of this. And I knew the smartphone would be the death of me. But I try to focus on the on the positives of it. Well, now I have all these things. Like if I want to research something for the show, I don't have to go to a library and get an encyclopedia. I can just go online, put on a search, do this, that, the other thing. I can do a bunch of things on my phone. So I try to focus on the positive things, and I think it makes me happier because I notice a lot of times, and this is just my perception of it, when a lot of people are looking back on everything, waxing nostalgic, whether it be for the 50s, the 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s, 2000, whatever it is, when they're looking back, they kind of get angry that it's not like that now, and it kind of takes away from your enjoyment of what you're doing now.
I think that it's also not necessarily in Joe's case, but I think that older people than ourselves tend to look back and wax nostalgic for when things were easier because they're afraid of the new technology or afraid of whatever the thing is that's frustrating
them. When I listen to some of Joe's things, I'm like, when did Joe become grandpa? Because a lot of the things you say are like what our grandparents would say.
Yeah, but a lot of the things, see, back in the day, there was an essentially a work ethic that these people had. The people that came over at that time had such a work ethic. Because you're talking about people that came to this country that had the balls and the tenacity to lift themselves from where they were and move to a place they'd never been before. They pulled up stakes.
Crazy.
And they came to this place, and those were the people with that tenacity that started to, you know, build this generation who loved to come here.
But if I may interrupt, the illegals, who are very often Latino.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of illegals from all over the place, excuse me. It's a misnomer that they're Latino. But we'll take the Latinos, who are much maligned in this country, send them black, blah, 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 blah. Those are some of the hardest workers. American dreams. You see, they got 3, 4, 5 jobs. They're trying to support all their family. They're doing, you know, they're running around. They're delivering food. They're out in the fields and everything. So it's fun to malign those people, but those people have the work ethic that you wax nostalgic about.
However, yeah. For the most part, when they came here, the difference is that they do have the work ethic. But what the difference is, they didn't expect us. They didn't expect to come to this country and expect people to speak their language. The native language was spoken at the home, and it was instilled that outside of the home, English was to be spoken.
But I think, listen, there's certainly a minority. You know, like I was told, like, don't move to Fort Lee when I was looking for a house because it's all Korean or whatever, and they'll kind of shun you.
Yeah, you know. Yeah.
Yes, yes.
Which speaks
kind
to
of.
But that speaks
kind
to what Joe.
Yeah, kind of. No,
but that speaks to Joe's point.
Yes.
That does speak to what Joe is saying. And
it's
that,
like,
that
you're
is,
not
that
assimilating.
Is
you're acting right. Like, don't come into our neighborhood, which I think is wrong in every case.
But exactly. But I think that's more than the exception than the rule. Because if you looked historically, you know, in the early 20th century, it was the Irish and Italians who came. And they lived in, quote-unquote, in ghettos and communities amongst themselves and everything. And they slowly assimilate. I just think it's a way to alienate. I kind of put this on somebody else's Facebook page.
Oh, well, what the Koreans are doing?
No, I think by saying they don't want to assimilate. There are groups, like I said, like some of the Koreans in Fort Lee. And I'm with you on that.
Yep.
But I don't think that's the vast majority of immigrants that come here.
No. In a nutshell, because basically, you're talking about a lot of other immigrants per se. But however, the whole proliferation that these people are coming here and we have to change everything to speak Spanish is something. No, you're coming to here. English is spoken here.
But isn't that really? And I know what you're saying, because it can be frustrating. Like, you're on hold. Really? Press 2? Do I?
Prima el ocho.
But then again, if you look at it from a business standpoint, isn't that just good business if you realize that the Spanish-speaking is the fastest-growing minority? Isn't it just good business to appease to these people and get their money and make their experience as pleasant as possible? I mean, wouldn't you do that if you were making widgets?
No. If I was making widgets, I would expect the people coming into my place that they need to speak English.
Yeah, but if your competitor is making it easier for the Latino-speaking people that is the predominant growing population, and they're killing you in business 2-1 because they're catering to them, and the Latinos feel more welcomed by that widget maker, wouldn't you change, or are you going to go out of business?
Eventually, people are going to need jobs. They're going to come to me anyway. You
know? No, I'm not talking about jobs. I'm talking about people looking to buy products.
Like your customers.
Yeah, I'm talking about the customer base. I'm not talking about jobs.
The customer base. The customer base.
If there's another widget maker, and they are more...
Se habla español.
Yes, more accepting of the Latino population. So the Latino population is going there because they can press those. And, you know, they have an easier time placing orders for widgets. And you're standing firm. I'm an American country. I'm going to only English anyway. Even though it's your principle, don't you have to adjust just to stay in business? Or are you going to go down with the ship?
You know what? I think I might want to go down with the ship.
You're going to let your kids starve on principle?
You know what? I would basically, if you go in there, there's got to be a stand where you say, look, English is spoken in this country.
I don't think we have an official language.
We don't.
We don't have an official language.
But the thing is that one language, one central language is the way to unite the country. That's how you unite a country, to have one central language.
But I would argue, because we've done such a good job in comparison to Europe with our assimilating our population, our minorities, we are a more united country. Because if you talk to most Muslims in this country, they consider themselves American, which because... For the vast majority, it's becoming harder and harder. But Bush was great about this after the strikes on 9/11. It's like, don't target these Muslims,
right?
And everything. He was great.
They're not the terrorists. They happen to be the same religion as those nut jobs, but not to that extreme.
And you know, there was a lot of his constituency that wanted to go against directly what Bush said. But Bush did the right thing, the harder thing, and said, no, this is not the right thing to do. And I think because of that, we don't have as many homegrown terrorists. Sure, there's the isolated lone cell that gets, you know, radicalized, you know, by what they see on the internet and everything. But as a whole, you can go into our Muslim communities and not feel threatened. I've played predominantly Muslim communities in Michigan, because Dearborn, Michigan, there's a lot of Islam and everything, and I never feel threatened. I think it's because We do a good job of making them feel like Americans. And yeah, it can be frustrating. It's frustrating when you walk into a store and you want to order your hoagie or sandwich or whatever it is, and they're talking in a foreign language, and you're like, dude, come on, I just want to get a meatball parm sub and move on. I get the frustration.
Yeah, that in service industries, that's particularly
frustrating.
It's rude
by them. It's rude by them. But I think we do more detriment to ourselves if we get all indignant and righteous and, you know, mark our territory. No, you have to speak this language.
No, isn't it? Well, indignant and righteous, I think it is being accountable and showing respect for the place where you are.
We have to turn Joe up a little bit, or he has to speak closer because
I was wondering.
I'm hearing him as well.
My plan is
chair, I keep on sliding down in this chair.
No, I was looking at the monitor, and I was surprised we didn't hear anything sooner. All right,
Well, Tom just got in. So as soon as Tom got here, we got yelled at about the sand.
Finally, somebody's paying attention to
ladies.
The others had no interest. Joe's
and Donnie. Ladies and Donnie in the den. Everybody else was slacking off on telling me about
the sand. Can you hear me now?
I can hear you the whole time, unfortunately. Listen, I just think the point is it's fun to wax nostalgic. I guess, you know what? Everybody likes to romanticize everything, whether it be our childhood.
Well, it's romanticizing and it's learning from the past. If you don't take lessons from the past and apply it, when I was talking about a work ethic, a love of country, working hard to strive, there was a lot of horrible things going on. When you talk about black soldiers, African American soldiers that went to war for the country and then came home and was discriminated against. I mean, there was a lot of awful things too.
Right, that's why I was bringing that up when you were like bringing about like the good old days. We had a lot of crappy things going on.
A lot of crappy things, but there was central. But my whole point was there were central core values that made the country strong, that made the country united, that we're not that are no longer here.
But see,
anymore.
I would argue against that, and then we'll move on to something else. I would argue against that because when I was when I toured overseas for our soldiers, because that's what you just brought up, the soldiers, the black African Americans, as opposed to the other ones when they would come.
Well,
back.
They were white
Buffalo
African-Americans.
Soldiers, white African Americans. There are.
I would say to you, Joe, seeing what makes up the ranks. There's a lot of Spanish speaking Latinos that make up fighting for the United States. A lot of Muslims fighting for the United States. So I would say, though, the minorities, that core value is still there. You know, they feel like Americans as well as they should.
For the most part, in that respect, yes. But it's a small portion.
I don't. But what is that based on? Who says that? I mean, I haven't met anybody that's like, screw America.
But
not that they tell me.
I'm sorry, Joe, but by your own standard, saying I haven't met anybody like that
But I even said not that they would tell me.
No, I mean, your anecdotal evidence of by people that you've met and spoken to is as random as his.
Well, no, except for the military thing, because I met a bunch, you know.
Yeah.
Countless.
Okay.
No, but I'm saying, like, I know the media, and we talked about this last week, likes to portray whatever they want to portray, you know, because it keeps us all fighting and distracted from the real things that are going on.
True.
But I just don't see this this un-American feeling amongst people that come here.
I see it in the way that a lot of people that come, you know, for the most part, a lot of people that come here don't feel that they should assimilate into the culture. They don't want to speak the language. They don't want to, you know, respect the culture. It just seems.
I think it's a lot harder, and it's not an excuse necessarily. I think it's a lot harder for older people to assimilate. You know, we couldn't learn. Like, if we went moved to Korea, we couldn't learn Korean now.
You want to know something? I would be in I'd give a one hell of an effort.
But you would. But you know what? But if you're trying to support your family on your menial job, and you're working three jobs as much as you want to, and some do learn, but it's not that easy.
I would make
the kids learn though.
As Joe was saying, I happen to agree on this. It was one of the core values of people that used to emigrate to this country is that, damn it, they were going to learn English. And as a matter of fact, it wasn't so much that they spoke English at home. They tried to make a lot of families that I knew that their first, second generation, their family said, no, we're not speaking our language at home. We are speaking English because we're Americans now.
Right.
And that that principle, that thought of no, we speak English here, seems to have dissipated.
It was a little different in my mom's side of the family. Italian could only be spoken at home.
Right, right.
Outside, you know,
how about spoken?
Spoken.
That too.
Maybe English would have been better to be spoken at home.
Yeah,
and you could have said that properly.
Always take them. I always got on the high horse. All right, but
that's right. Look up at my horse. You're going to get some horse shit.
I also have always had a problem with people coming here and not. There are two points. Coming here and not learning English because that's what all the other emigrating groups did. But the other thing is, I think a major factor is that that the other people that came to this country, they assimilated in the fact that they played by all the legal rules here. I do have a problem with people coming to the country and not paying taxes.
Yeah, I got a problem with that, too.
Also with huge that, I also have a problem with people coming to the country and assembling around a 7-Eleven. There was a whole big thing in Farmingdale.
Assembling around 7-Eleven?
Yeah. Basically, a lot of these illegal immigrants.
Slurpees are delicious.
A lot of illegal immigrants would assemble around 7-Elevens looking for work.
And Home Depot.
And Home Depot.
That's been known.
The generations that came before that didn't do that.
But again, like we said, it's a different job market. You got to remember, somebody's hiring them. These companies know they can hire these guys off the books, pay them crap, as opposed to hiring you, union, on the book, paying you a lot more money and getting slammed. I mean, that's why, you know, if somebody wasn't hiring them, they wouldn't be hanging at a Home Depot and 7-Eleven. You know, it's all about money.
But if the younger generation wanted to work those menial jobs and build themselves up, there would be no job market for them.
You got to remember that. You got to remember though that somebody's working at McDonald's. It doesn't pay great. Somebody's working there.
I know, but a lot of these jobs were by college kids that wanted to work hard. But nobody wants to do manual labor.
But you use
labor anymore.
Well, there's not as many of those jobs
because they weren't taught a work ethic to work from the bottom and strive to get to the top.
Everybody wants to be a reality TV star and not work for it.
Everybody wants a handout.
Well, I mean, there certainly is that, but there's also a clearer path to get that way now. But you could also support yourself by picking cotton or tobacco or making widgets. You know, you could work in the factory and support your family and have a nice middle-class life. These people can't do that now. You work at Walmart, which is a fine job. You know, everybody goofs on Walmart. But if you work at Walmart or McDonald's or someplace else, as an adult, which a lot of them have had to.
I have no compassion because you came here looking for that.
I'm not talking about even minorities or immigrants. I'm talking about there's people now in their 50s, 60s that can't support themselves on these jobs.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
I mean, you know, it comes to an economic problem. My point is this. I think just as an outlook, it keeps me more sane if I think about all the cool things that are going on. And maybe it's because I got a daughter, so I can see the future in her eyes.
Maybe.
You know, and I also get to see what her generation's going to be and the generation above her because – you know, she's at the dojo, and I see all these high school kids and college kids, and I see how they carry themselves and everything.
Yeah.
I see what good kids they are. That
gives me hope.
You're seeing what good kids they are because you're seeing them in a place that teaches values. I mean,
Russ
has some great core values.
Russ does have some great core values, but they also have those values. And this is going to be the next generation. Whoever gave it to them, whether it be their parents or Russ or whoever it is, the point is they have them. So I don't like look at all these kids today. We're doomed. I'm like, all right, man, look, these kids are giving to charity. You see these stories on the news and everything about these youngsters, these 8-year-olds, 7-year-olds raising money for hurricane victims or heart disease or whatever the cause is and everything. And I'm sure this was going on in the 50s and the 60s.
I understand that, but my whole purpose at the beginning of that cartoon was that there was back in that the greatest generation, there was a love of country. It was what a great guy from great man from that generation also said, you know, don't ask, you know, what your country could do for you, what can you could do for your country. There wasn't this entitlement sentiment.
But
if
you took that statement, then we'll move on. But if you took that statement, I've been saying that, from John F. Kennedy, you could argue that the same thing could be said to today's billionaires and millionaires who own this company, who own most of the wealth in this country. And we do have, and you brought it up, the wages have stagnated. And you look at Wall Street, you know, the stocks are through the roof, the business are doing well. If there's this love of country and past businesses, companies had more of what you're talking about, there's this duty to to their country. Wouldn't they raise the wages? Wouldn't they, even if it meant a little bit less in their bottom line, instead of shipping all the jobs out to China or India or wherever they do it, wouldn't they build more factories even if it costs them more?
See, that's where Catch-22 is. Now, on the whole thing with that, basically, I'm talking off the cuff, but maybe you can help me along. I think
I'll be happy to talk off the cuff.
NAFTA might have had the North American Free Trade Agreement. And a lot of agreements that were made had a big impact on that. I think
I know. I don't remember it that well. It was like the early 90s under the Clinton administration.
I'm very sketchy, so I'm not gonna
I'm sketchy on it too.
I'm not going to really totally jump in the soapbox, but that was a turning point that had a big effect on his. We're not a manufacturing economy.
It was under the Clinton administration. It was supposed to be hailed as good, and I think there's been a lot of bad that's come of it.
As a matter of fact, I think it might have – oh, God. Yeah. Towards the end of the Bush 1 administration, and I think going into the Clinton administration. Now, with that, that was the death knell of the manufacturing in America.
But forgetting about what the cause is, just to go back of the love of country and doing what's right, and then we've – if – shouldn't the – even if you do take a financial hit and there's this love of country, shouldn't these corporations – be doing more? And some do. There are some companies that say, no, we're going to stay American, and you know what, we're going to take a hit, and we're going to keep building factories here, and we're going to pay our workers well. But most don't.
A lot of it comes back. A lot of them are building factories here because basically they're finding out with tariffs and so on and so forth that it is actually more conducive to manufacture products here in the States.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's a fairly new thing, and that's where people would go after people like Obama go, well, he's not friendly to business. Well, you know what? Help create jobs.
Well,
and I'm all for giving
basically, Obama is not friendly to business because Obama, when there was a statement made that a lot of companies were going overseas, moving to Europe and stuff like that because of the taxes, and Obama's answer to that was, well, they have to pay their fair share. I don't think that – I think that's just a pat statement where he doesn't really understand that these people have a bottom line.
Well, but that goes back to – here's my point, though. That goes back to love of country, which is the point I say. If you love your country, like you say, and you're all in to make sure your country, where you are a citizen, is thriving and healthy, shouldn't they give back? Even though it's going to hurt the bottom line,
what they do is they provide jobs.
Overseas.
Well, that's the thing. If they can make incentives, it's up to the government to provide incentives to bring it back here.
Then you're taking away the love of country responsibility from them.
I'm taking it because basically the company runs on a bottom line, okay? And if they have to move overseas, it was kind of the government's fault of having these trade agreements.
But
if I could interject for a second, Trucker Tom, who knows more than all of us about NAFTA, he said NAFTA eliminated a lot.
He also has Google.
I know. Good for you, Tom. NAFTA eliminated a lot of the penalties to American businesses to build and develop outside of the U.S.
Which is a problem.
Which is the problem that you're both actually addressing.
That was a major problem. So wouldn't it be so love of country, wouldn't it be up to the politicians on both sides of the aisle to provide a solution to make it more advantageous for businesses to make a profit here?
Yes, because the businesses themselves, as you're saying, they're looking at their bottom line. Corporations don't have a country. They're where they are stationed,
right?
But that is only the physical plant of where they're stationed. Wait, let me finish my point for a second. They don't care about what country they're in.
Right. So why would we hold them to a different standard than the average person? That's my point. We're kind of excusing the corporations, who are people too.
Mm-hmm.
We're excusing the corporations from their love of country to affect their bottom line, but we're expecting the workers or the people not working, whatever the case may be, to have that love of country. My point is this. Be consistent. I'm all for love of country. I think the citizens, the workers, should have love of this country because it's a great country, and I think the companies where we all buy their stupid products should have a love of this country too. That's my point. Everybody should live by that standard. That's my point.
That would be great if that could possibly be true. But
well,
see, the thing is, now we're talking about, you know, average Joe and Jane citizen. You know, I agree. You know, it's like I love this country mostly because I can sit here and say what's shitty about it. That's great.
Yes, but not under your real name.
No, of course not. And that's another problem. Then we'll address some other day.
All right, Joe, what's going on with you?
No, wait.
I want to move on. We spent an hour on this.
I know, but one more.
We were talking about NAFTA, for God's sake.
It's a good topic.
It is a great topic.
We got other funnier topics like Cosby raping people to get to.
Oh, hee-haw! They're rape
he
jokes.
He thought so.
They're rape jokes.
he thought so.
No, but there's another, just one more thing about that, is that, you know, it would be great if we could get the corporations online, or at least the politicians online, but since the politicians are all paid by the corporations, they're not going to help us with
well,
the,
that's,
with
well, that's
the
what it is. I mean, you know, listen, I'm always going to go back to Citizens United. Which, you know, was the Supreme Court decision that said corporations
are
can,
people.
Well, no, well, also that they are people, and they can give as much money in campaigns as they'd like.
So
which
ridiculous.
Makes you and me pretty much irrelevant. Because the politicians don't have to worry about what we think, because even if we give the max, we can't give nearly as much as a corporation can. They're all in the pocket, left, right.
That's something that's got to be right, obviously.
I was thinking about that yesterday. The only way that can be taken back, because it's kind of like Roe Wade for the people that hate abortion, it's not going to be overruled. The only thing I could do is like possibly narrowed. Like you would have to have other cases that would eat away at that decision.
Oh, and we haven't?
No, but I'm talking about with Citizens United. We haven't yet.
No.
We won't with this court. Yeah, I mean, we're, you know, as long as this court is the way it is, because these are the ones that vote, for the most part, these are the
ones that voted this.
Exactly.
Right?
It might be narrowed down, but I don't see that happening, because I don't think there's a will for that.
Well, where
by
would
the people
you,
who have the power.
Yeah, where would you ever get the money raised by the 99% to get that turned around?
The 1% who has money owns 99% of the world's wealth.
Yeah.
All right, Joe, what's going on with you?
What a smooth-ass transition that was.
I'm not saying which percentage you are in.
Joe looks like you just hit him with a 2x4.
I could have done that. I did not. Instead, I just...
But you also employ millions of people.
Well, not as many as they used to.
Well, that's people. We have to figure out what, you know, there has to be a way to figure it out. You know, I mean, going back to what we were saying before, I mean, it's like, you know, it toughs now. People grew up during depression and had nothing and figured it out.
No, it was a different time. Yes, they did. But a lot of people died. A lot of people died during the Depression. And
people died.
And a lot alcohol was illegal, so there was a lot of bootlegging and gangs. So it wasn't all glory.
Yeah, but it made for good movies. But
it made good movies.
But you know what? One more thing, and we'll move on.
Promise?
Yeah. I mean, no. with a lot of the take the New Deal. All right, when Roosevelt had the New Deal, mm-hmm. a lot of it was building the infrastructure of the country.
The WPA.
Yeah. Now they built the Hoover Dam. They built, you know, all these
could
major
never
projects.
Could never pass that now.
But
Bernie Sanders wants to.
I agree with him, but now the argument would be it's big government. Government shouldn't do it. Private entity. Obama tried.
Yeah.
There's no will to fix these highways and bridges, even though our infrastructure is falling apart.
Now, crazy.
Now, you see, and like I said, now here's the thing. I'm sorry, Dad, but it's worth it.
All right. You know what? This is going to be the first segment. Nobody gives a shit about what you guys did this past week. All right, after this, we're going to take a break.
I was at City Steam. I drank my balls up. I told jokes. All right. That's my story. So anyway.
Pip was hanging out with some Mexicans.
My friend Jess hung out up there. There's some drunk broad came out of the place. She laid her fangs, and we all laughed. Moved on. All right. Anyway.
now back to NAFTA.
Basically, there has been a study, which I think is on both party lines, that our infrastructure obviously is horrible.
Yes.
Oh yeah.
Also, our transit. You know, the way we handle our transit.
We don't
and stuff
have
like
these super trains that they have.
We
in
don't
Europe
have the super
Asia.
Trains, and it's hindering our economy.
Yep.
Yes.
If they had something that sort of like a New Deal thing that would rebuild the infrastructure,
mm-hmm.
and divert some of the taxes on other pork barrel programs into this,
yes.
and make it into the states,
please,
it would create thousands.
You just described what Obama wanted to do in the first term. You just described that, but the Republicans wouldn't do it. Now, you could say maybe the Democrats should have done more, but that's what Obama wanted to do, to create jobs. And, we're going to go into a deficit. You can't raise taxes. There was all these things. But what you're describing is people like me who go, well, that sounds like an excellent idea.
I don't know.
I don't want to be stuck in traffic while they're fixing the highway, but a safe highway does sound like a good idea.
But when it gets down to a lot of the roads, a lot of the bridges
mm-hmm.
are sub-satisfactory. They're in danger.
Oh, yeah.
They have to work. See, this is where both.
But if they would have raised your taxes, because that might have had to happen, if they would have had to raise your taxes to do this, would you have been going along?
If it was for something to fix the infrastructure, yeah, because it's not a bad idea.
See,
it's
and that's tangible, where Joe is not always on the right.
No, because yes. it's because it's for a tangible result. If
yes.
it was going to be, if you're going to raise my taxes and it's going to be for another entitlement program that hasn't been tested or that could fail, I'm not for that. But if it's for an infrastructure to fix the bridges, to make the commerce in this country better, that has – you're spending money to make money. It's got a tangible result. It's a common sense thing. I'm not going to sit there and because Obama thought about it and it's from a Democratic Congress and Senate that thought about it and it's a damn good idea, I'm not one to sit there and go, oh, well, you know, that's stupid and it's ignorant.
Well, I agree, but unfortunately a lot of people who vote the way you tend to in elections did not agree with your thinking. And because it was Obama and because they were worried about deficits at the time, remember that was a big thing, deficits. We owe so much money, can't raise taxes, can't have deficits, blah, blah, blah. It didn't happen. Yes, we need it. And we're going to pay when more and more bridges fall apart and people die.
You know what we really needed to do? Is we really needed some other country to bomb the crap out of us. And then China could come over and rebuild our infrastructure for us like we did to Europe after the war.
That's going to be 2025.
Right?
Listen, the Chinese are smart.
They're already poisoning our dogs. They might as well bomb us.
The Chinese know you need good roads to deliver.
They're not dopes. Come on. No, I'm almost half kidding. No.
By the way, they just had their slowest economy, China, in like 25 years.
Good.
So believe it or not, America's actually doing pretty well.
Because they have no control over what they
do. No, we're doing well as far as the world economy.
It's the world market, how much the metals and stuff like that. China consumes a lot of copper and metals, and what happened was the demand led for the pricing to go up. So whereas you could get something cheaper in China. See, what happens is a lot of times in China, the pricing was so much cheaper that it made sense to import from China. But now, if there's a differential between 10%, 15%, a lot of companies will go, you know what? We might as well get it here.
And why don't we go someplace where they actually have standards so that we know that the shit isn't going to break the minute we get it back? Or poison the dogs or something.
A lot of the standards were, about 20 years ago, horrendous. China has got their quality level up. However, like I said, due to the cost of the metals, their consumption of it, it's got a lot of companies due to like a 10% margin, a 15% margin, 20% with tariffs and drawage charges. They decided that it's a lot cheaper to have it made here.
Mm-hmm.
Not a lot of it, but but enough of it where it is. It's eyebrow raising, which is good news.
And perhaps if we had the also corresponding increase in our, protecting our infrastructure or improving our infrastructure and incentives from the government so that companies, because we have to deal with the corporations, so that companies wanted to stay here, then we could be a superpower again.
Yeah.
Well, we're going to continue with the comedy. I know this is going to last a minute. We're going to keep the topic light.
Furthermore, no, I'm kidding.
When we come back, something that's hilarious. A couple things: the Pope on religion and comedy, and Cosby and
rape. Another hour.
fun. Stay where you are.
You can listen to Davin's Den live every Tuesday on davinsden.com, iHeartRadio, The Indie Authority, RuthlessRadio.fm. TalkSuperStation.com, CyanNetRadio.com, Gone Rogue Radio, HawkRadio.net. Also, you can download the TuneIn app on your Apple or Android device and search for Davin's Den. On iHeartRadio, you will find all of our shows, plus customized highlights of us scamming the scammers, going back to the very beginning of our interactions with our African friends. Go to iHeart.com and search Davin's Den. The Indie Authority also has apps so you can listen live on your mobile devices. Platforms include BlackBerry, Android, and Apple. You can download previous shows from the following places: DavinComedy.com, DavinsDen.com, Stitcher.com, iTunes, the Android app, iHeartRadio, RuthlessRadio.fm, TuneIn.com. iHeart can only be heard in the U.S.